Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local schools, businesses, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 symptom support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
I'm Charlie Shelton Orman. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, the long haul. A syringe filled with a dose of cold liquid. It's been at the center of the global fight against COVID-19, and this week, it became a reality for Americans. The first people in the country started receiving a vaccine. Dr. Katie Passeretti of Atrium Health in Charlotte was the first in North Carolina to get it.
You know, feel perfectly fine. Again, just a moment of hope, a moment of, like, potential for change of the course that we're on with the pandemic.
This week's hope has been mixed with concern over a rising case count. As videos of healthcare workers getting vaccinated spread, so has the virus. Hospitalizations across the country are also increasing at alarming rates, and North Carolina is no exception. Here's Governor Roy Cooper.
The vaccine can't yet have a significant effect. We must get these trends turned around. Seeing vaccinations underway gives us hope at the end of a hard year. But this virus continues to be extremely contagious and deadly.
A vaccine will provide a much-needed long-term solution, lowering cases, hospitalizations, deaths, and one day, ending the pandemic. But for some people who have already had COVID-19, the end still feels like a long ways off. That's because physical and mental effects can linger for weeks, sometimes months, after initial symptoms.
I am not the person I was in September. I was a runner. Until last week, I needed oxygen to walk from my bedroom to my kitchen. And just the decline has been horrible. I mean, it's mentally, emotionally, physically, all of that has been so very difficult.
Whitney Kuhn lives in Moore County, North Carolina, near Pinehurst. She calls herself a COVID long hauler. That's somebody who continues to experience symptoms long after contracting the virus. Kuhn says she became sick in early October with typical COVID symptoms, a fever, body aches, a dry cough. She went to the doctor, but two different COVID tests came back negative.
So I was left for a long time, not even really knowing what was wrong with me until about a month later, my doctor ran some antibody tests and it was positive. And she said, oh my gosh, this is what you've been dealing with. I don't know, you know, why these swabs were negative. But I mean, it was very, that part of it was extremely stressful, just not even knowing what was wrong with me. And then realizing that I had probably exposed my family to the illness, because once I got the negative swab, I stopped isolating. And it just really got, all of that really got into my head and was very hard to deal with.
Kuhn says at one point she thought she was getting better, but by the end of October, her symptoms came back hard. She had extreme shortness of breath, intense chest pain, and a rapid heart rate. She immediately went to the doctor and was admitted to the ER.
No one could really find anything wrong, technically, which, not that I wanted anything to show up as bad, but I felt like they don't have the answers. They don't have the resources. But all the specialists I've gone to, most of them have just, I mean, at one point I was offered a psych consult by a pulmonologist, which, I mean, of course I have anxiety. Of course I have depression. My life has changed drastically, but it all started with a physical symptom. It wasn't in my head. And, that was very, very hard to deal with.
It seems like the overarching message that you've gotten is, okay, well, we'll test you if you have COVID or not, if you have the antibodies, but that's all we can do from there unless you're really sick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they will admit you through the ER. Everyone can go through the ER, you know, if you're ill enough to do that. And they will admit you if you have pneumonia and if you're very, very sick. But Yeah, I mean, for people that have mild to moderate illness, there's not much hope. And I mean, you know, I missed a window of opportunity for any kind of treatment with the negative test initially, as far as antivirals or, you know, whatever they're doing now. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people do fall through the cracks that way. And I worry that that might be contributing to the long haul epidemic that I'm seeing, because most people are just advised to go home and, you know, fluids and vitamins and rest and Tylenol. And I don't know if that's enough, you know.
All of this, the lingering physical symptoms, the questions around how to treat it, Kuhn says it's intensified a mental weight that's been fueled by a constant feeling of stress.
I feel guilty talking about myself. So many people are going through the same thing, but I'm very grateful that COVID didn't take my life, but I liken it to just stealing my livelihood, really, because I am definitely not the same person I was. And it's left me with this gross uncertainty about my future. Mentally, there's a lot there. Yes, I would say definitely I've struggled with anxiety, depression, hopelessness, helplessness, fear, frustration, worry, and just so much uncertainty. There have been very few days since this started where I didn't cry at least once. Just thinking about, it's almost like a grieving process. Like you feel like something in you or part of your life is dead and you don't know if it's ever coming back. And you have to face that maybe this is your new life. Things that I thought I'd be able to do, run another 5K, walk my dogs, go to a theme park with my kids. Like I don't know if those are things that I'll be able to do again. And that's really hard because I'm only 44. I'm not very old and I don't have pre-existing conditions. And I just, you know, that's not what I thought. And doctors, you know, they, on a hopeful note, have said they think with an asterisk that I will get better with time, but progress is really, really slow. You want to think you're on a progression and you're not. And no one knows why. And the people that are supposed to have the answers don't have the answers.
And you reached out through some online groups, as I understand it, to gain some of these answers and gain some sense of community through this?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, there has to be a way to connect with other people in my position. And, you know, again, after the frustration with not finding answers in the medical community, I thought, well, there has to be like a think tank of people that are talking about this, you know. And I just happened to search on Facebook one day and found multiple groups, COVID support groups, people who are actively sick, and then also several long hauler groups and advocacy groups. And so I've joined about four or five of those, and it has been the best thing I've done thus far for myself, at least mentally. So, you know, we share things about tests that we've, you know, need to ask the doctors to run on us, and just what has worked for you and what hasn't worked for you and what supplements do you take. You know, it's just great. It's great to find other people and to be validated, to hear your story told from someone else's voice. Things I could have written myself just have made me cry in sort of a happy way, if that's probably not the right term, but, you know, in a relief almost of, oh my gosh, I really am not crazy. Sorry, I'm getting hoarse. That's part of this too. And there are success stories on there too. You know, I've been dealing with this for 7 months and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that's hopeful. And then sometimes it can also be anxiety provoking when you hear other stories of, I'm still, you know, 10 months into this and I'm still sick and not better, you know. So it is a double-edged sword, but for the most part, it has been very therapeutic.
Whitney Kuhn told me that at one point, she scheduled an appointment with a therapist to talk about her mental health. But she had such shortness of breath the day of, she had to cancel the appointment. However, even though Kuhn hasn't technically been diagnosed, she says she struggled with anxiety and depression. We're only just learning about the enduring mental consequences for COVID survivors.
So more and more, you know, we realize that patients who have had COVID need to be followed up. We need to assess the long-term complications and manifestations of COVID. And certainly psychiatric manifestation seems to be one of them, at least in some patients.
Max Takei is a clinical fellow with the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Oxford. He also treats elderly psychiatric patients. Recently, he helped conduct a study on the links between people with COVID-19 in the U.S. and psychiatric illnesses.
Basically, since the pandemic, which is a public health emergency, might have some ramifications in mental health. There has been some research and papers published on that topic and strongly suggesting that that was the case, but we didn't really have good measurements of the scale of that issue.
Takei and his colleagues found that 1 in 5 people who were diagnosed with COVID were also diagnosed with a psychiatric illness, like anxiety, depression, or insomnia, within 3 months. The research also found that people with COVID were twice as likely to receive a psychiatric diagnosis compared to patients with other viral or respiratory infections, like the flu, for example. Takei says the cause of all this is still unknown, but there are a few possibilities.
The first one is what we might call a psychological one, which is patients are suffering with COVID, and that's a potentially life-threatening illness. And that's scary. And, you know, people get stressed out, and that's what we might call in psychiatric jargon a major stressor that leads to the onset of a psychiatric illness.
Another explanation, Takei says, might be biological.
We know that some viruses affect the brain. And we're starting to realize that SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that causes COVID-19, might affect the brain, and it might affect it directly. You know, we know some viruses go into the brain and affect the brain cells, and in that way they might cause things like depression or anxiety. But it might also be in an indirect way. We know that COVID-19, even though we think of it as an illness that affects the lung, it might affect other parts of the body as well by causing an inflammatory response, or causing a lot of inflammation in the body. And it might be that inflammation is also affecting the brain. And we know from previous research, not related to COVID, but previous research shows that inflammation in the brain might cause things like depression or anxiety. If some patients or some of your listeners after COVID are experiencing symptoms of anxiety or depression, it's important to know that that might be an actual diagnosis, an actual illness, and this is something that can be treated and can be treated successfully. And it's important that they seek help for it. And that's applying outside of the COVID-19 pandemic, but it certainly is something that seems to be even more important perhaps during COVID.
I do feel this like worry there'll be this hangover effect of where everybody else will move on and I'm still anxious about it.
Mac has been dealing with COVID's physical and mental toll since March. She lives in Chatham County and asked to remain anonymous. She wants people to know about her experience but doesn't want her identity to be public at this time. Like Whitney Kuhn, Mac says coping with COVID's after effects is a constant and exhaustive struggle.
The toll of that is emotionally draining because you want to stay positive, you want to like continue to engage with people, but you just got to take care of yourself, you know? So it takes a lot out of you. It takes a lot out of you. And I worry about, you know, I just worry. I worry about my parents. I worry about, like, I haven't seen my parents in over a year. I've been fortunate enough to see my in-laws, but, you know, I'm terrified.
Mac says she has found some relief. While the after effects of COVID continue to put a weight on her body, she's been able to mitigate some of the mental burdens through meditation.
And I have been trying to up my meditation in the morning as much as possible, even if it's just, like, I don't get up and sit. I lay down flat and I just try to focus and stay calm, or just not even stay calm. I let the feelings come and then I let them go. And that's been like a daily practice for me that's really helped with my anxiety and with the just overall pandemic anxiety, you know. The other thing I worry about is as people start to socialize, I hope I have the endurance at some point to be able to do that.
Well, thank you for sharing about some of your experience, and I know that isn't an easy thing to do. Why is that important to you for people to know about this in your experience?
I think it's twofold. I think the first point I would make is one of the things that concerns me is I am well aware of the just healthcare costs and the types of healthcare coverage we have in this country. I'm very concerned about the long-term impacts of COVID and how people are going to get the help they truly deserve to bounce back. I'm really fortunate that I work for a rehab company. I've been an occupational therapist for 20 years. So I have some of the know-how to pace myself and I've got people I can reach out to. And I have health insurance. So when I needed physical therapy, I went. I worry about the long people receiving access to support services. They really need mental health and physical health. And then personally, you know, it's interesting. I talked to my parents about back and forth on whether or not I should talk out about my experience. And my mom always tells me that, you know, speaking about your experience normalizes it for everybody else. So if you stay quiet, nobody can support you and you can't support others. And that's a very isolating place to be. And I want people to know that they're not alone. They're not like losing it. They're not making it up. It's not in your head. This is a real thing. And the only way we're going to get through it is to support each other and talk about it.
If you are experiencing emotional distress or want to talk to someone about treatment for mental health related to COVID or otherwise, there's a helpline, 800-662-4357. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Charlie Shelton-Orman. Leonita Inge will be back next week. Our producers are Rebecca Martinez and myself. Lindsay Foster-Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.